Okay, so the Gemara in Brachos, the question, the topic is called, what is it? They call the significance of names, something like that, right? Okay, so significance of a person's name. So this is the Gemara in Brachos on seven Zayin Amud Beis, 7b. Yes, okay, so the Gemara talks about two names in specific. So it talks about Reuven and Rus. Okay, Reuven and Rus. So the Gemara says like this: says if you're following along, it's you don't need to, but if you're following, it's like the seventh to eighth or eighth to last skinny line. So it says Reuven. So Reuven was the first of Yaakov's sons. The first of Yaakov's sons. The mother of Reuven was Leah, and the Torah says it says what's the name Reuven? Amar of Elazar. Amra Leah. Leah said Reu. Ma bein bini leben chami. See, what's the difference between my son and the son of my father-in-law? Okay, our father-in-law was Yitzhak. Okay, Yitzhak, and Yitzhak had a son, two sons, Yaakov and Esav. Right. So, see, what is the difference between my son Reuven and the son of my father-in-law, Yitzhak, namely that is Esav. Okay, see what is the difference between my son and Esav. Okay, why? He says, "De'ilu ben chami," because the son of my father-in-law, namely Esav, avagav, even though he willingly sold his firstborn, right? Esav was the firstborn, and he sold his rights of the firstborn willingly. Yaakov, the sibayim curse because of Yaakov. See, what does it say by him? Even though he willingly sold his firstborn rights, by Yisto Yaakov, right? He hated Yaakov. He tricked me. So he had a whole beef about Yaakov, but it's really fair and square, right? He sold him legitimately. He was treating it for the lentils, right? So despite the fact that Esav willingly sold his bechor, you see he resented Yaakov for it and he hated him for it. But my son, namely Leah, saying her son Reuven again, who was yet just born, right, just born, naming him Reuven, Alpha Gavdal, even though against his will Yosef took the firstborn from him, Reuven didn't trade it or anything. Yaakov just kind of gave it to I'm sorry. He did actually. He sinned. Once Reuven made a mistake and he moved the bed of his father, so the Yaakov, the father, gave the firstborn to Yosef, but it was against his will. Reuven didn't say, "I hereby trade it or surrender it," but it was against his will that the firstborn was taken from Reuven. Afilo achi, nevertheless, lo aknabe. He wasn't jealous about it. That when the brothers try to throw Yosef into a pit, so Reuven heard and he tried to save them. So Reuven tried to save Yosef. So that's what he's saying is that see the difference that again, the son of my father-in-law Esav, he had the firstborn and he sold it willingly, and despite that, he ended up hating Yaakov for it. He ended up hating him for it. Right, but my son Reuven is unwillingly getting the mechor taken away from him, unwillingly getting the firstborn rights taken away from him, and despite that, it's unwilling. Still, he did not resent. He didn't feel jealous about Yosef having. On the contrary, he was going to try to save Yosef. It didn't end up working out, but he was attempting to save Yosef. So that's the name Reuven, Reu Ma Bain, Reuven. See the difference between the firstborn of my father-in-law and my firstborn. Okay, that's the Gemara. That's the way the Gemara is explaining the name Reuven. Obviously, it's difficult to understand because these events didn't take place yet. Right? They didn't know that. I don't think Leah or anyone knew these events were going to take place. So it's funny to say that she's naming him this based upon these future events, right, which haven't yet occurred. Right? That's the simple difficulty. Does anyone else have any other questions on this Gemara? Okay, in case you came late, 7b, like Reuven, two dots Reuven, Brachos 7b.
the pasuk when Leah names Reuven gives an explanation for the name that's different than this.
That's true. What does it say?
Bani.
Yeah, Ra Hashem Bani. Ki Ata Yavani Yishirai. Hashem saw my affliction. It's true. It's interesting. It's like a drasha. It's like an alternate shot, alternate than the plain shot in pasuk. Yeah. Okay. Good point. Right, which would seem to indicate this isn't the plain pshat of the name. Plain pshat of why she named it that way is because of the says in the Chumash. But this is like a drasha. It's an additional idea, which is somehow contained. But yeah, good question. Good question.
I have another question.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like such a good thing to name your son after. Like, oh, look, he's better than Esav because he tried to stop killing his brother. Like, he still wasn't very good. Like, I'd bring highlight to some other good attribute of Reuven.
Yeah, that's true. Right, you mean it's a comparative name. He's greater than the greatest Rasha, okay? But I mean, that's the name, greater than the greatest Rasha. My son is no terrible dictator. Okay, great. He's not Esau or Rasha. Right, that's right. It's a good point. Good question. Okay. Anyone else? Any other questions? Okay. So let's look at the next. Yeah, go ahead.
It sounds like she's putting Yitzhak down. Like that's what she's trying to say.
Well, I don't know. She's putting Yitzhak's son down. Right? But I guess he is somehow lumping Yitzhak into it. The son of my father-in-law. It does sound that way, right? Sounds that. Somehow, you're right, I hear that. There's a subtle dig against Yitzhak, because it's the son of my father-in-law. My son and the son of my father-in-law. Yeah, okay, that's a good question. Right, is that his fault or is that Esau's fault? Okay, good question, good point. Okay, anyone else? Okay, good. So let's look at the next Gemara. So I think Gemara says Russ. What about Russ? Okay, so this is somehow Tanya Dioma, if you will. Because we just read lane or didn't lane Rus, or maybe some of you have, I don't know. So Rus over Shuas. So the story of Rus, so it says, what's her name, Rus? So Rus was Moabia, right? She was born as a non-Jew, and she ended up converting and marrying Boaz, and eventually being a foremother, or whatever, ancestor to Dovra Melech. Right? So it says, Rus, my Rus. Why is she named Rus? So Amar Rav Yochanan, Shezachsa v'yatza mimena David. Because she was meritorious, and David HaMelech came from her. What about David? She rivahu l'hakadosh baruch hu b'shirot l'shishpachos. Who soaked, absorbed, you know, through, lavished upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, praises, songs and praises. Okay? Songs and praises. So that's Rus, like Rivo, is like to fill, to pour. Let me see how they say here. Rivo. Lashon Sova, satisfied. Satisfied HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Shiros and Deshpachos. Okay, like satisfied with the drink. So it's like she poured. She would be the mother. She would have come from her David HaMelech, who would pour on HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shiros and Tishbachos. So her name Rus is based upon that. Okay, and once again, this is even more difficult. It's one thing if you want to say Rus. I mean, that Reuven Leah named Reuven something based on Ruach HaKodesh or something like that. Now you're saying is that Rus was named Rus by her Moavi parents because she would be Zilcha to be the mother to David HaMelech, who would pour, you know, to satisfy HaKadosh Baruch Hu with songs and praises. I mean, it's strange. Strange to say that the name is somehow based upon that. Right? Okay. Good. So it says like this. Oh, by the way, there's a Rashi. I forgot to read Rashi. But it says by Leah, when she named Reuven, so it says, Reuven ma ben vini ben chami, al shem ha'asid, kara u'shemo. So she called him that name based upon the future. Okay, Kedamrino and Lekama and Shmagarim. So she named him Reuven based upon the future fact that in the future, her son was going to not envy Yosef for getting it, again the Bechor, as opposed to Esav, who did envy Yaakov for it. So, and it's based upon the future. Kedamrino Lekaman, as we'll say later, which we're about to read, Shmagarim, the name causes. The name is a cause. Okay? So the name is the cause. So now let's get to that in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Minolon the Shmagarim. We're in the second wide line of Zayin and Beis and Brachos. So how do we know that the name causes? How do we know names cause anything? So Amar of Allah, the Rose says, the Amar Kro, the Pasuk says, L'chu chazu mifalos Hashem. Go and see, come and see, or go and see the actions, the wondrous actions of Hashem. Asher sam shamos ba'aretz. Okay, that he put great destruction in the world. It's talking about Mefarshim and Herodak says it's talking about the future that Hashem is going to wipe out the enemies of Yerushalayim, and it's going to say, "Go check out the greatness, wondrous actions of Hashem that He caused great destruction in the world." Okay, but the drasha the Gemara says that's a pasuk in Tehillim. Al tikrei shamos, don't read it shamos, which means destruction. El shemos, names. So it's saying, see the wondrous actions of Hashem, that He created names in the world. And names, it's saying, is a reference to this idea that the name causes things. So it's like a drasha. The drasha from the pasuk, it's saying, is somehow, this pasuk indicates that the name causes. Okay? Names cause things to happen. So somehow the name of Reuven caused him, I guess, to be not jealous of Yosef. And the name of Rus somehow caused her to be the mother of David HaMelech, who ushered in, who poured satisfied Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Shiras and the Shmachos, with songs of praises. So it sounds like if you want to have good kids or good offspring, all you have to do is pick the right name. And if you get a good name, if you figure out a good name, then you'll end up being fortunate, right? Which obviously sounds too easy. The world doesn't quite work that way, right? A lot of people are named Reuven or named Russ and didn't end up so great. A lot of people, a lot of different good names, which don't end up so great, right? I mean, it doesn't seem like names could substitute for good decision-making and free will and tzidkus and everything else. So to say that somehow the name Reuven or the name Russ somehow predicts the future, I mean, it sounds like that's what Gemara is saying, but it's hard to understand. And if you want to somehow say Russ, I mean, Leah had Racha Kodesh, she was at Tzadikas, but what about the children, the parents of Rus? The parents of Rus weren't even Jewish, they were Moavi. We don't know much about them. But they had Racha Kodesh, the name of Rus, based on that. I mean, it's hard to believe that. Right? So these are the problems. Okay, does anyone have any other questions? Any other questions on this Gemara? Okay. Suggestions about how we should approach this? Anyone have any ideas or, you know, maybe approaches, how we would go about approaching this? What would be a good place to start, maybe?
Rabbi Feder?
Yes.
I don't know where I heard it, but I remember hearing that a father supposedly has a moment of Ruach HaKodesh when he gives the name, whether it's at the Aliyah for a girl or at the Bris for a boy. So I don't know if there's a chicken and egg thing in play here. The effect of the name on the person, I mean, the Ruach HaKodesh would imply that the name is the person is who he's going to be, and the father's Ruach HaKodesh, the name should reflect that person.
Right.
On the other hand, we're hearing now that it's almost as if the right name will affect the person rather than reflect the person, will affect the person.
Right.
So that's not direction, that's just more questions, really.
Right. So I guess either of them. By the way, Asher Koach for your speech tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I had zero notice.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah, so I guess either way, I mean, there's two ways of going. I like how you laid that out. So there's one way of learning is that the name is somehow causative. There's like, oh, I'm sorry. It's like there's a Ruach Kodesh that they somehow know the future somehow through Ruach Kodesh. But the question is, well, what about, like, or the other way is that the name causes. Either way, I think it's a difficulty because what about Bechira? I mean, doesn't a person have free will? Is it somehow like you just know this person's going to be a tzaddik or rasha and the name somehow is, causes that or indicates that? It seemed to be, I mean, either way you go, whether you say that it's just they have some sort of nevuah and therefore you name the person that, I mean, for what purpose? I mean, why would there be a ruach kodesh? Just so you have the name? Just to predict the future? And it doesn't seem to be all too, you know, is this work in general? I mean, I'm sure you could try to do experiments. I'll show you two people. Without telling you their names and tell you about them, I doubt anyone's going to be able to get their name right. It just doesn't seem to be true that the way the world works this way. I mean, it would seem, unless, you know, it's only citing two examples. It doesn't have tons of them. So the question is, how do you drive this idea with the idea that a person's, ultimately how a person ends up is not based upon just a name, but is based upon their upbringing, their parenting, their midos, their places, their various experiences which they go through, the work and decisions which they make in their lives, and all that, right? And just to reduce a person to a name and to say, oh, that's why, right? Or somehow to say that all parents have this Ruach HaKodesh, for what purpose? Just to say they have a Ruach HaKodesh they don't know about? I mean, I named some kids. I didn't think I had any Ruach HaKodesh. It didn't seem like it. It kind of, you know, like the names, and is this just universal? Does everybody have this? It just seems like, and for what purpose? That's a question. It's just hard to make heads or tails of this in like a sensible way.
Rabbi Bitter?
Yes, Michael.
So as an approach, it strikes me, one, that Re'u Ben doesn't seem to have a specific meaning. It doesn't sound like it's specifically talking to Yitzchak and Esav and talking about that dynamic. Rather, maybe that's just sort of a concept that exists within the name, and that's part of Reuven's actual personal dialogue as he lives through his life. So meaning, when he came to the point in which he could have betrayed Yosef, in his mind, some of the mechanisms that were going through was Reuven. Like, what am I going to make that mean? And the way that he did it was to say, see, I will be better than Esav, who would happily betray, even though he really sold his birthright.
But could he have done that with any name? Like, was that part of Leah's intent? Or is it just, you know, Reuven is just like, you know, creative?
In terms of Leah's intent, I'm not sure. Meaning, I would say that that's more the name he has, and then he's relating to it and then reacting based on how he lives his life. You could say perhaps that Leah set up this dynamic within him by putting down that name that he was going to be measuring himself to children. I would maybe go that far.
I see. Okay. Okay, good. Okay. Is anyone else? Okay, so maybe just to get started, let us, this is what I would say. I would say just to be like, I guess what you're doing, Michael, that's a good approach, that type of approach. It's like, I'd say, forget exactly the main question is how do names really make a difference? But let's ignore that and just let's talk about Reuven and Leah. Just take that simple. Forget about the bigger picture and let's just focus on the first case of one. The saying is that the name Leah is expressing Reuven this idea, this distinction between Yaakov and between Reuven and Esav. So why don't we try to understand better, probe the difference between Esav and the Reuven. And she's drawing a distinction in this name. So forgetting about how she knows this or anything like that, the Gemara is certainly highlighting a distinction between the two. So maybe we could try to define better understand the distinction which she's making between Reuven and Esav. And then maybe after we have a good idea about what that distinction is, maybe we could see how that was somehow brought about by Leah or something to that effect. But let's just first define the difference. She's saying, see the difference, check out the difference. So the difference, well, let's try to define the difference, right? So she's saying is that Esav got the Bechor, willingly sold it, but then resented Yaakov for it. Reuven, on the contrary, got the Bechor taken away from him against his will. And he, on the contrary, he wasn't jealous of Yosef. On the contrary, he was willing to save him. Right, so how do we explain that? Like, how do you explain the difference between the two? Besides, we're just saying is Esav was a Rasha and Reuven was a Tzaddik. I mean, that's like an oversimplified version of it. But in specific, what would you say is the difference between the two of them, such that they exhibited this trait?
I don't really follow the question.
I just want to understand more clearly, what's the difference? What type of midah does Esav have, and what type of midah does Reuven have, such that Esav is begrudging Yaakov the Bechorah and Reuven is okay with it? Do we get more insight than just saying, you know, he was an Esadik and he was a Rasha, and he was a good person, and he, you know, was jealous and he wasn't jealous? Maybe we could understand a little better why he was jealous, why he wasn't jealous, something like that. Yeah, David.
Rabbi Peter?
Yeah.
Yes, maybe by Reuven, he saw himself as part of a greater system. So he sees himself as just one detail of it. So he recognizes, okay, Yosef is proper for him to be the leader, and I'm in my position. Esav was the opposite of that. He did not see himself as part of a system. He saw himself as we say, sent the universe, that everything goes back to him. And it doesn't matter what deals I made in the past. This belongs to me.
Right. Perfect. Yeah, good. Okay, great. Okay, anyone else? Yeah. Yeah, okay, good. So as David said, well, that Esav was a self-centered person. He was looking for the self-aggrandizement. And he was like a conqueror. He was looking for everything for me. They have everything. He was looking to conquer. So for him, it was all about the self. It was all about the self. So he traded the Bechor because he wanted the Adom Adom Hazeh, right? And he figured the Bechor is worthless. Who cares about it, right? But ultimately, he realized the Bechor was good. He realized that it was important. And Yaakov, it was important to Yitzhak, certainly. And Yaakov wanted it, and he got it. And now he was being deprived of it. So that was a blow to his ego. He felt like, I want the Bechor, right? And he hated him. And it might be better for Klal Yisrael, for Yaakov, to be the Bechor. And the Nevuah went along with it. And sure enough, the Bechor was given to Yaakov, fair and square, and along with the consent of the Nevuah. Whatever, who cares? He still doesn't care about that. He just wants it all for himself. And he doesn't care. He doesn't care. He's not interested in the betterment of Klal Yisrael, the betterment of the world, or anything like that. He just wants me. But Reuven, and especially oftentimes the Bechor has that feeling of empowerment, the firstborn, there's a sense of entitlement, and that played into the psyche of Esav. He felt, I was born first, I have rights, and I want to have everything, and I deserve the firstborn. You sold it, I don't care, I want it anyways. See, but Reuven was the firstborn also. And in theory, he was entitled to the firstborn. But he ended up failing. He tripped up. He did an Avera and he lost it. And Yosef stepped up to the plate and Yosef was a tzaddik and Yosef ended up getting it. And Yaakov Avinu recognized that it was appropriate for Yosef, the best thing for Klal Yisrael was going to be for Yosef to be the Bechor. Yosef to get the double portion, Yosef to be the leader, and not Reuven. And that was what Yaakov Avinu judged was the best thing for Klal Yisrael. And for Reuven, if that's the best thing for Klal Yisrael, then so be it. As much as he is internaturally, emotionally interested in the self, he realizes that the self pales in comparison to the greater good. the good for Klal Yisrael. So he was a person who, of course, every person is naturally looking out for the good of the self. But Reuven realized that that's just a superficial bias that we have, that we're looking out for ourselves above everyone else. But Reuven appreciated the greater good. He realized that he's one small part of a bigger picture. And if it means he's not going to get the Bechor because Yosef is the most appropriate one, then he's going to save Yosef and carry that out. And if it means he gets the Bechor, he'd be happy to have it. But if he doesn't, he doesn't. But Esav doesn't care about the perfection of the world or anything like that. Esav cares about himself. He doesn't appreciate the fact that he's part of something larger, which he could be a part of. That's part of what made him a Rasha. And it's part of what made Reuven a Tzaddik. Right, so this is a discrepancy between the two. They both were in the firstborn. They both naturally had the zechus to be in the firstborn, which naturally makes the first person feel important. But at the same time, Reuven was able to have a proper perspective. Esav was not. Okay, good. Now the question is that now that we have a basic idea. The question is, could we now say, how does this go back to Leah? Leah somehow named him Reuven. Reuven, look at the difference between them, between the firstborn of my father-in-law and my firstborn. So how could Leah have known this? Leah didn't know the story of all this stuff was going to happen. So she should have warned Reuven in the first place. Don't go away, the brothers are going to throw him into the pit. Doesn't seem like that anyone knew the future of what was going to happen. So what sense is there now to say that the name is somehow causative or somehow lay an end to this because of this idea? Right? How do we interpret, how do we now go a step further and apply this to the name, to Leah naming him Reuven? Okay, any thoughts?
Rabbi Feder? Rabbi Sinneman gave that share a few weeks ago.
Yes.
And the difference between the Kinnas Sofrim, and it sounds almost like Esav was what we were saying about Rabbi Kiva, that the only reason why he valued the Choras was because Yaakov did, and he didn't begrudge him.
Right.
Whereas Reuven is given a mandate, Reuven, look around you and look to see who should get what where. Right. And I'm not just saying this, so you should realize you didn't send me the link for nothing. I did listen to it after you sent me the link. but that maybe that's what comes into play. And the name, what we're talking about, the chicken and egg, it's a little bit of both. Right. It's both part of who you are and therefore your mandate, what you need to do. You need to be someone who looks and sees where Klal Yisrael can best be served as a whole.
Right. Okay, good. 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 Anyone else?
Yes. So, yeah, I had a thought that maybe Leah was raising Reuven with sort of that mindset that he shouldn't feel entitled to being a Bechor, that even if she didn't know what was going to happen, that he wouldn't lose that status to Yosef, that maybe, even if he were to have it, he shouldn't feel entitled like perhaps Esav did.
Right. Okay, good. 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 Yeah. Anyone else? Yeah. Good. Good point. Now,
just a question on that. Isn't that implying that Yitzchak and Rivka raised Esav with an attitude problem or something? That he felt he was entitled even after he sold his Bechorah?
Okay. Good question. Yeah. What would you say to that? A problem. Yeah, okay, good question. Good question. Anyone else? Yeah, okay, so let me develop a little bit within the approach that Yael is suggesting. Maybe we could answer Yael's question. yeah, it also ties in with what Yonki's saying. Namely, Leia realized, oh, there you go. Gail, you wanted to say?
Oh, sorry, yeah. Yeah, sorry, it wasn't on here before. Anyway, what I just wanted to say was, I hear that question, and I was thinking, I guess, maybe, Yitzhak and Rivka did try to also raise their son, like, Esav in that way, but I guess it does come down to free will, and perhaps, you know, he did have some sort of, maybe it was like a nature thing, even if they nurtured him to be a certain way, he had it within his personality so strongly that he just felt that, or he didn't make those free choices. But I guess maybe Leia had a certain mindset, or she was like cautious of that, and either, you know, parented more strongly because she had that mindset already and like, you know, learned from the mistake with Esav, or because, you know, Reuven, I guess, didn't have that flaw within him that he didn't have so strongly for Leia to parent against, I guess.
Right. Okay, good. Good. Yeah, so let me elaborate a little bit, but good, well said. So Leia realized, she saw from Esau, she saw the danger of the Bechor. She saw that a Bechor is a tricky position to be in. Okay, a Bechor feels entitled. This generally a Bechor is a leader in a family, and they feel like they're in a position of power, and they have rights. They do have a right of being a double portion, or it seems like that's still true in Halacha, and it seems to be true then. And that could be, it puts the Bechor in a position of potential greatness, but also a potential, this self-centeredness, this entitlement, and a potential great challenge, which a Bechor often could have. Because sometimes a Bechor steps up to the plate and is fitting, the most fitting to be the leader, but sometimes the Bechor is not the most fitting to be the leader. And Esav was the firstborn, but he was not the most fitting to be the leader. And Reuven was the firstborn and was not the most fitting to be the leader. Sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes the Bechors are great. It's not, there's no formula. But she realized the Bechor has a unique challenge because emotionally he is the go-to guy. He is the natural next in line, the natural leader. And he has to be able to rise to the challenge if he is appropriate, but to be able to take a step back if he's not the most appropriate. And she realized, and that's difficult. It goes against the grain, this emotional grain. And it's very hard for the Bechor to allow the lower brother to rise up in position and to put himself beyond because he's not so great. Right? That was like an example that did work. Another example is Menashe and Ephraim that worked out well. Right? So she could be that Leia knew in her parenting, she was happy to have a firstborn, to have Reuven, but she knew that there was going to be a challenge. And she knew this was, see, up until this point, it was Av to Ben. This was the point where Klal Yisrael is going to branch out. They knew there were going to be 12 children. They knew this was when Klal Yisrael was done with the stage of the Avos, and now it was going towards building Bnei Yisrael, the nation. The nation is going to come for the Shiftei Ka. As I'll say, they knew there were going to be 12 of them. And she knew that this firstborn position was a great challenge. And she wanted to give him a name which would reflect, which would bring to mind, and I don't know if it's so much the name as much as the concept. The name is indicative of a concept which she was always conscious of. See what happened with Esav. See the problems, the potential traps of a firstborn. And I have to make sure I raise my kid, Reuven, in a way that he doesn't fall prey to that. And she was successful in doing so. So it could be she sensed, maybe as best as Ayala's question, maybe she did sense that Yitzhak made a mistake. Maybe she sensed that Yitzhak wasn't careful enough about this. Perhaps he wasn't careful enough about it, and she wanted to learn from that mistake. She wanted to be especially conscious of it. And maybe, we don't know. I mean, you're right. As Yael said, maybe Esav had a free will, which I'm sure he did. But at the same time, maybe she did see there was some type of a failing in part of Yitzhak and Rivka in not properly educating or preparing Esav for the great challenge of being a firstborn. And she realized the challenge, and she therefore was conscious to raise him with this idea in mind. And the name contained this idea. There was a reference to this concept in the name. And it's not just the name, though. The name indicates the mindset, the headspace of the parent. And if that's what the parent is thinking about when they name the kid, it's what the parent is thinking about every day of a kid's life. It's So what the parent is thinking about how they raise the kid and how Leah's raising Reuven, she's raising him with this in mind, to be potentially to be the Bechor and the leader of Chal Yisrael, but first and foremost to be a team player, to recognize that this is not about you, it's about Chal Yisrael. And if Chal Yisrael needs you to step up, then you're the one. If you step down and someone else is appropriate, Yosef, for example, then you got to be able to step aside and support him. And she raised him that way, and the way a parent raises a kid oftentimes has a great impact in what the kid ends up becoming. Early upbringing, the ideas that are conscious in the parent's mind in the upbringing of the kid oftentimes have a great impact upon the future life of the kid. And that's part of the beginning of our answer here about how we understand this idea of Shmagarim, of the name causing things. The name indicates the mindset of the parent. The mindset of the parent is often goes a very long way in terms of what the kid ends up becoming. Of course, kids have free will. And a name, you can't ultimately make a person a tzaddik or a rasha. But that doesn't mean it's a total coin toss. And with parenting, it makes no difference because after all, everyone has free will. The name of the parent, the ideals which the parent inculcate into their child and raise their child with and think about from the very beginning of their, even from their raising of their kid, make an impact on the kid. And that often could have a great impact. Not always. The kid could totally take the message and turn it into free will and choose the exact opposite. That's always possible. You can't manufacture a tzaddik. That doesn't happen. But you could set up a good basis, which gives the kid the best opportunity to be able to step it up.
Rabbi Fair?
Yes.
Yeah, what do you make of the fact that the Gemara has it as like a positive statement, like with a certain confidence, re'u, see what it is, as opposed to, you would expect something, I guess, to like be a tefillah, may it be the case that, that he has proper perspective.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, that gets back to Alice's point, is that the plain pshat in the pasuk is that she named him that because of Rosh Hashanah. So I'm not sure if, like, it's truly she had in mind, or Chazal are kind of twisting this into it and noticing that this is how Leah raised him. So I'm not sure, like, maybe the name has to fit with Reuven, Rosh Hashanah, and with this. But I don't know. Maybe she was, I don't know. Maybe she was, like, specifically contrasting the Esav to her kid, and she was making an example to him. Look at the difference. Look at what happened to them, and this is what's going to happen to Theo. And sometimes, if you're tentative about it, maybe it doesn't make the same impact. And she's making a strong message to Reuven. This is the difference between you and Esav. Don't fall prey to it. Reuven sounds like it exhibits confidence. And maybe the confidence is, sometimes a strong message to a kid is important. If you do it in like, hopefully, Meretz Hashem, whatever, it doesn't, sometimes that's important in parenting, but sometimes certain ideas have to be expressed strongly. You express Esav and you say, look at Esav. This is not going to be you. That's Esav HaRasha. This is not going to be you. Strongly. And that impacts a kid differently than just a wishy-washy type of maybe.
Yeah, no, that's very good. Thanks.
Yeah. Yes. So someone asked, what about Esav? What was Yitzhak Rivka's idea on naming Esav? I don't know. I don't know what their idea was. This drasha is not being Dorish that. So I don't know. There's a lot of names in the Torah. So I'm just trying to work with the Chazal and see what try to develop ideas which they were dissipating. But there are other ideas and there are other names and they're a good question. But I don't know how to, I don't know. Yeah. All right. So now let's talk about Rus. Okay? So let's talk about Rus. So it's saying Rus. It's saying is, what's the name Rus? So Rus is that she's going to be Zocha, to be the mother of David HaMelech, who satiated HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rivehu, satiated HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Shiros Bishpachos. Right? So, what does that mean? It's a little bit harder, no? I mean, we don't know too much about Rus's parents. But,
isn't it saying that Ruth took that name when she was Megayer? That she picked that name for herself?
It's not clear. Some want to say that Ruth Hamoah. Rashi says Ruth Hamoavia. They want to say that means that was her name originally, and she just kept it. It's not clear. because I don't know. Let me see if it said that. Yeah, it says, some want to say, the Malden says that people oftentimes change their name when they converted, but Ruth didn't. So why'd she keep the name? I don't know. It's hard to know. But I mean, it seems like it's trying to show the original name, not that. Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say that this is her new Jewish name. I mean, the Torah called the Navi calls her Rus earlier, right? Before she converted. I mean, you could just say change, you know, it's based on the future, but.
Rabbi Feder?
Yes.
Isn't it unclear when Rus converted? I think most of the studied Nach people, I'm not one of them, but I've just heard Shiorim, believe that even when Boaz died, she had not yet converted. It was only afterwards to be with her mother-in-law that she converted. And that would then very much jive with the whole Ruth Hamaviyah thing and very much jive with trying to understand if she stayed a Moabite until she converted for her mother-in-law after her husband died, the name would play a role in her life through that point. I don't know if you ever heard that she didn't convert until after her husband died, after Boaz died.
Right. Not Boaz. You mean, I forget, whatever.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Rashi says, Esti just sent me here. Efrasim Hashuvim. Yeah. Eglon Melech Moab. Oh, here see Eglon Melech Moab as Bitol Machlon.
Right.
Yes, she was the king of the daughter of a king, and right. She married him off because she saw the Hashivas of I guess of the Jews.
But yeah. Didn't convert yet. And yeah. How they should married, I don't know. But I don't know if you or anybody else had heard similar.
No, I don't know. I never really, I don't know. I haven't heard either way. Yeah. Yes.
Rabbi Feder?
Yeah.
Just what exactly is the limud from the name of Rus?
I guess Rus is Revo. She satiated HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Shiros and Deshbachos. I mean, the Shoresh of Rus is Rava, which is like to satiate with wine, with, I don't know, satiated. But saying here is Harosh offspring, Dovin HaMelech, satiated HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Shiros and Deshbachos.
The Sepharia translation is inundated.
Inundated. Okay. Sounds good.
Is there a clear connection between satiation and song?
I don't know. I mean, I guess you said, no. Satiate someone with songs? Like shower them with songs? You know, that type of... I don't know. Good question. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Any other thoughts? Yeah. So maybe David.
Yeah, maybe it's possible that it was really like, so to speak, conversion is the right word, but a turn of thought on Rus's own part, that she saw in her own name what her potential was, meaning she so to speak, utilized her name. The name could stand for anything, but she made it such that she was not, so to speak, destined for a certain role based on where she was born and where she came from, but that she could see herself in a new light.
Okay. I hear you. Yeah. Okay, so I was thinking a little different. That she, I mean, it's hard. We don't have that much to go on with Rus, I think, as much as by Reuven and Leah. But so I think it's like this, is that Rus basically, she found herself in a circumstance where she went to this faraway land, she left there at Israel, and basically her husband died. And she was left with Naomi, right? She was left with Naomi. And Naomi said, don't stay with me. Right, she said this to Rus and to Arpa. Don't stay with me. Right? It's I'm bitter and I'm old and I'm not gonna have sons. And don't stick around with me. It's this is a terrible life for you. You're young, go back to your home and you'll be able to build a better life for yourself. What are you gonna do? Stick around with me. So she was in this circumstance, which was emotionally very painful and difficult. Her husband died. She's with her old mother-in-law. And a normal person would have just ran the other way. As her sister-in-law did. But Ruth, despite the emotional travails and the difficult situation she found herself in, she sensed MS. She saw the truth. And she stuck to Naomi. And she said, your nation is my nation, your God is my God. And she basically put herself into a difficult emotional circumstance for the sake of truth, right? And arguably she ended up marrying Boaz also, which is he was a very older man, also for the sake of truth and of building Klal Yisrael, being a player and being a mother to great people in Klal Yisrael. So she basically, despite her difficult situation in which she found herself, emotionally difficult situation, she was able to keep her focus upon what's truly important in life. And it could be that's a midah which is exhibited in David HaMelech's life. David HaMelech had a very difficult life. He was chased by his son, by great enemies, he was always on the run, and in Tehillim, you see the Shios Neshpachos of Tehillim are basically, among other things, are David HaMelech's praise and Avodas Hashem, Shiros Neshpachos to Hashem, based upon the situations, the difficult situations in which he finds himself. And despite the emotional travails, David HaMelech keeps his focus on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why I think Tehillim, to this day, is used for people in the day of Tzara. When people have emotional difficulties, either learning Tehillim or saying Tehillim, David HaMelech talks to people who have emotional difficulties because David HaMelech had a tough life, and through it all, he was able to keep his focus on HaKadosh Baruch Hu and on singing praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it could be that was the beginning of David HaMelech was in Rus, is that she basically also, her husband died, she was stuck with her old mother-in-law, but despite the emotional difficulty, she didn't run away from the difficulty. On the contrary, she confronted it and utilized it and turned her energies towards the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that's a model of that type of an attitude, that type of a personality, who's able to rise to the difficult situations and be able to keep their focus and turn towards the Kodesh Baruch Hu and not running away, could be laid the groundwork for a few generations later for David HaMelech. Okay, so... And David HaMelech like showered or satiated HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Shion Neshpachos. It could be it means is that he had a Shion Neshpachos for every circumstance. He always had something to say. He always turned towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever his situation was. When he was happy, he was a keen mizmar, he was a keenan, he was all different types of circumstances. He was always had different ideas and different songs and praises, outpourings of his emotional state and directing his emotional state. In not to wallow in the state, but on the contrary, to use it in turn towards the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that was her character trait. And again, in an infant form. And she wasn't David HaMelech, but she laid the groundwork for David HaMelech. And it could be it's saying is that a Rus doesn't come from nowhere. Okay? I mean, in general, people don't come from nowhere. I'm saying it's impossible. Sometimes they do. Avraham Avinu arguably did. But in general, people come from an upbringing. And although Rus was great, and she was a Gioras, and her parents weren't a Gioras, but at the same time, she emerged from her parents. And arguably it's saying, as a Shema Garim, it's good actually that Rashi said that her parents, her father wanted her specifically to go into Klal Yisrael, is that her parents, in naming her, it could be they had this Midah also. Maybe not in the same extent, to the same degree, but it could be they partook of this midah, that they had a certain sense of being able to prevail through difficult emotional circumstances and a certain direction towards truth. Now, again, they didn't convert themselves, but at the same time, they offered her up, it seems with bracha, to send her to marry into Klal Yisrael. So it could be it's saying is that don't think that Rus is a Georas who just came out of nowhere. But Shema Garim, the name, the upbringing, she must have been raised in a manner, whether it's her name itself or more important than the name. I don't know if they knew the name Rus means Revo, because Baruch Hu, she was Rachel, but the point is the main idea that Chazal are getting at is that Ruth comes from parenting. Ruth didn't come from nowhere. She came from parents who brought her up in terms of training her how to deal with tough situations and how to keep her focus and her eye on the ball despite tough situations. And she didn't come from nowhere, and she took that trait and developed it more. And a few generations down the line, that trait developed and brought about a Davar HaMelech. So the Shema is indicative, I'm saying, is the Shema is the name given by the parents, indicative of the mindset and the value system of the parents. And that oftentimes has a great impact on the type of traits which will be exhibited by children. You with me? I have a further point to add, but let's see if there are any questions here. I saw Ben has been writing some text here. Give me 1 second. Wow, that's long. Torah to Mima. Okay, I'll have to look at it a little more closely later. Okay, but thank you for sharing that. Some say she's the daughter of the king. Yeah, that's what Esti said. Yeah, okay, any questions?
Rabbi Fedor, are you saying it's always the case the parents have something to do with it? I mean, like, take like Avram Avinu, it seemed like he was completely detached from Terach, and he came to recognition, yeah. You know, in spite of everything Terach helped.
Yeah. So in my short answer, I mean, I want to develop this point a little bit more in a minute, but my short answer is no. It's not that way. That's not always the case. But it's often the case. And look, I don't know. Maybe there's always something. Arguably, look, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say it so strongly that's always true. But I would think, arguably, Einstein Avram Vina's parents weren't Ovdei Hashem. But maybe there was some Mida which they did have, which they laid the groundwork for. You know, I'd have to do a study and see whether Terach had some sort of trait which was positive and which did, you know. Maybe he wasn't, he wasn't a tzaddik, but maybe there was something about his traits, something, I don't know. But I'm not sure if it's true, but I'm not claiming that it's always the case, but I'm saying it's often the case. I'm more saying that good traits in the parents often make a strong impact. But let me, I'll develop it in a little bit, because we still haven't did the drasha. The Gemara's about to make a drasha, and where do you know this from? So we'll take that up in a second. Good question. Any other questions or comments?
It could be a brother needed a father like Terach, because had he just been a standard guy doing some, not an idol maker, in other words, it could be the bad influence was important. Now, Rabbi needed to be somebody to enable him to discover that there was a creator.
Yeah.
It helped that he lived in the house of somebody who made a living creating gods, you know what I mean? The clear false nature of it was right in front of Avraham Avinu's eyes.
Right.
So the effect of the parents can also be from the negative perspective.
Yeah, right. But that's not that's a different angle. My point is more that parents have the good traits are carried through. But yeah, that's almost like accidental. Sometimes it works out in a funny way like that. But yeah, that's true.
You know, Avraham Avinu isn't one in the generation, you know, lifetime, not generation.
Yeah, correct. Right. Yeah, right. It's hard to make generalities from Avraham Avinu. You're right. Yes, Moshe?
Yeah, just a quick comment about Rus and her, I guess, being able to cling to this idea. I mean, I think they say about Boaz also that he was very elderly, so she didn't have any, like, real emotional fulfillment with the marriage either. Or, you know, I mean, there must have been something, but, you know, it was fairly limited also, so it's not like...
Yes. Yes, good point. Yep. Yes.
I just wanted to sort of make a statement, see if it was like in line with your approach. I wanted to comment on the idea of a name sort of making use of the natural psychic egotism of reflecting upon oneself, meaning if someone is named Reuven, they think of Reuven, they think, oh, this is me, and meaning it's a psychic dynamic that is created. So like, in the case of Rus, we wouldn't necessarily say that it was the upbringing of her parents that caused her to love Torah, except for Rashi, but rather that concept, as she was now in Israel thinking more about maybe the Hebrew meaning, I don't know what it means in Moabi, maybe the same, then she would be reflecting the same point, and then that we see it played out completely in David as like a fully realized version.
Right. Yeah, so I think it's both. I mean, I don't think the name in its own right would necessarily work. I think it's a combination of the name and the parenting. Name comes from the parent. So I think it's like a mix. And the parents have a concept and in the name and the upbringing. And, you know, maybe name works on its own right, but that's not the way I'm learning. It's more about the parents, and the name embodies the ideals of the parents.
Yeah, I'm not saying it works on its own. I'm saying more that it's a mechanism. Yeah, and that you have a bechira.
Yeah, I understand. There's an important psychological identification a person has with their name, and therefore the values, it's one thing values which you teach explicitly, but then there's an impact which could have from the power of the name, because your name, you psychologically identify with your name, it could be a stronger impact on you emotionally than lessons which you recite on a regular basis. Yeah. That's, yes, I hear that. That's your point, right?
Correct.
Yes. Okay, good point. Good point. Yeah, so then the Gemara says, so how do you know Shema Garim? So it learns out from this pasuk, right? See the wondrous actions of Hashem that he made destruction in the world. So it's saying, don't read it destruction, Shamos, but read it Shemos, names. So it means, see the wondrous nature of Hashem that he made names in the world, right? So it's a funny part. I mean, the pasuk certainly isn't talking about this. But what is this adding? I mean, if it's not the plain shot of the pasuk, then what is it adding to just take a pasuk? Because I guess in Asmata, just like leaning on it. But is there some further idea which is being brought out by this pasuk? So I was thinking that perhaps you could say like this, is that it's trying to point your attention to the wondrous nature of the world that Hashem made. Okay? Lechu, and the example there, it's talking about see the wondrous actions of Hashem to wreak havoc on the nations. But here it's saying, look at the wondrous nature of Hashem that he made names. And it could be like this, is that there's something amazing about the Bria, about the way Hashem created the world, which is exhibited by this, like, this idea of the names. Okay? And I think it has a parallel in science as well. But let's just start with the names. So, there's a balance. On the one hand, there's a balance between free will. So think about Hashem was making the world, and he made a world in a way in which people have free will. And free will is part of the design that every person has the ability to choose to be its other great Russian. And that's on one hand. On the other hand, if every single person has, so to speak, absolute free will, and every person is in a, so to speak, the slide from scratch. Am I going to be a tzaddik? Am I going to be a rasha? Am I going to be a chacham? Am I going to be a fool? Am I going to, or every single decision, every person is like a clean slate, as if they don't have any upbringing, any parents, any anything. Each person starts from scratch. Do you want to be Avraham Avinu, or do you not want to be Avraham Avinu? Do you want to be Terach, or do you want to be Avraham Avinu? Every single person, they're just going to have a free, open, blank slate to just decide what they're going to be, then you're not going to have much progress in the world. Progress comes when you have a person who makes a great discovery, Avraham Avinu, and then he raises his kid Yitzchak, and he sets him on a certain path. And then Yitzchak raises his kid Yaakov, and Yaakov has his Shvatim, and so on and so forth. So, on the one hand, it's important that progress is made throughout the generations. And that's what allows a nation to build and allows mankind to develop, mankind to grow. The developments of one generation are passed to the next generation, the next generation, the next generation. And if every person on their own is just going to say, should I be a tzaddik, should I be a rasha, as if there's no upbringing and no parentage and no any ideals which are taught as a child, then you're going to have like a random thing, a generation, tzaddik, rasha, tzaddik, rasha, tzaddik, rasha. You're not going to develop a continuity, you're not going to develop a nation, a heritage, a family tree. It's not going to work out if it's totally random like that. So on the one hand, free will is the yisod, but at the same time, to make an absolute free will is in a certain sense would take away from the ability of mankind to develop and to grow. And Hashem set up the world in a way where there's not a contradiction. There's a balance between, on the one hand, parents exert a great influence on their children. They give them names. They inculcate their values. They teach them. They raise them in a way which highlights certain character traits which they study and they see as being important. and will lead to a good life, and they try to teach that to their children. And that gives the children a great background, a great backbone, a great starting point. And at the same time, even the greatest child of the greatest tzaddikim could end up being a rasha. Case in point is Esav. He had the greatest parents. He was identical twins with Yaakov. But he ended up being a rasha, and Esav and Yaakov ended up being a tzaddik. So there's no one's fixed in their nature by their parents. There is free will. But it's not totally free. There is an idea. There is a balance. There is a background, a strong background, and a strong, there's a power of the name. Okay, and that's what's saying, see the Mifalas Hashem, how Hashem managed to create a world which allows for free will, and at the same time allows for growth and development, and for children to be able to develop the character traits of their parents, and to build upon them, in a way which is not strictly determined. Again, if you want to make a strictly determined world, you can always make it that every tzaddik is going to have a tzaddik, have a tzaddik, have a tzaddik, and there's no free will. So you have to open up. But then if you want to open up free will, you almost like lose the ability to have education and to have parents teaching their kids lessons. So there's like a balance between the two, that there's the capacity. That's what I'm saying maybe is the point that the Mephalos Hashem, that is, he made Shemos, that he built this into the world in a way which doesn't undermine free will, but yet allows human development while at the same time is consistent with free will. And as an analogy, I think this is the case. I'm no biologist, but from my knowledge of biology and evolution, it seems to me this is the case with the evolution as well, is that there's an idea of built into the Bria, that there is parents passed down, parent organisms, not humans, but all species, pass down their characteristics, their traits, their heredity. They pass down their traits to their offspring, pass down to their offspring. And parents who are fit to survive pass down those abilities, those strengths to their offspring, But at the same time, there are mutations. There are slight, small differences which occur. And those mutations are what enable, when there are cataclysmic changes in the environment and the resources become scarce and there's the lakes dry up, be able to have a lungfish, be able to have a lung and develop life on Earth. So the fact that there are mutations and parents don't strictly pass down their traits to their offspring, but their slight variations and slight differences are what allows change to occur. But at the same time, if there was totally mutations and everything was totally random, then you'd never have progress. Progress occurs. The way there's a balance of evolution progresses is by a combination of generally, traits are passed down, but at the same time, there is the capacity for variation. And there is a balance between those two, is that they're mutations, but they're very slight. Enough to be able to allow progress to be made and mutations to allow for new organisms which could survive under new circumstances. But at the same time, if the mutation rate was too high, then you wouldn't be able to have any development. And then you just, every good trait would be lost. The next generation, you wouldn't have any continuity. So there's like, I'm saying like there's a parallel in Ma'aseh Hashem, that Hashem set up systems of chains of things which progress generation, generation, generation in the natural world. And then similarly in the human world, where he worked out the perfect balance to allow for continuity, but at the same time to allow for growth and new changes and new developments. And he allowed tzaddikim to grow and to flourish and to use their own free will to make changes, but at the same time not to throw away the benefits and the advances which they get from their parents and from the names. So putting that together, I think it's saying is a person is like a combination, you know, like the nature versus nurture. I think a person is like a combination of his nature and his nurture and his free will. And that balance of where you have the shemos, which is, I guess, the nurture, you know, and I guess the nature, there's the different factors you get from the parents. And that's this Chazal is highlighting that is very significant. But again, not the only significance. And that gets back to the question David was asking. Is that always the case? It could be by someone like Avraham Avinu, his nature and his upbringing and all that were totally in a different direction. But he has free will. So this is like one facet of the picture, which is the facet of, you know, Shemos and the upbringing and the parental, you know, influence. But there's a whole nother angle, which is the Koach of Bechira, which is, knows the, you know, is in a certain sense unbounded. So that's like another angle, but that's not what this Gemara is focusing on. Yeah. Okay, any questions, comments?
First of all, Yasha Koch, but I wanted to say, is this connected, or I think it is, to the idea that Adam Arishon on the sixth day was naming all of the animals, meaning is the Gemara or you referencing this concept of a name having some control over the development of creatures?
I'm not making that connection. Perhaps that's a connection to be made. This Gemara isn't making that, and I'm not, but I guess it's at the end. Perhaps that would be the case. I'm talking here in specific about human beings. This Gemara is like human beings and parents and ideas which are being conveyed. Whether you could make an analogy, I know I was making an analogy to biology, but not in that regard, on the name regard. So perhaps there is some way to do that, but I'd have to, you know, I'd have to develop that a little bit. See if it would work out, perhaps.
Rabbi Feder.
Yes, Les.
You see, even by Esav, that he picked up some of the traits of his parents. They say that he was the best example of Kavod Avim.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you see that... that the parenting did rub off in certain ways. They say about kids, they pick up things that you would not know that they pick up. They're very intelligent. They pick up very minute things in how the parents act. So you did that work by Asa.
Yes, it's true. It's true. Right. Yep. No point. But still, he decided to become a Rasha. Yep. Yes, Masha.
Yeah, I guess I was wondering, what is it about the name that is important for that? It seems like you could say the same point that, you know, parents transmit certain things to their children through, you know, like you're saying, through, I guess, you know, through their nature and through, you know, their influence. But why is the name actually important and critical for this?
I'm essentially learning that it's not really about the name. I mean, I like Michael's point that sometimes the name does contain an idea, and when it does, it impacts the person in a deep psychological way. But I'm more saying is the name is a reference to the parents and the ideals with which they raise their child. And when a parent chooses a name, it's based upon what name talks to them. And when it talks to them is the name that they're going to convey to their child and raise them with. And I'm saying the name is more of a reference to not to the name itself, but to the, you know, the ideas and identity which the parents have in store for the kid. They think of, they have a certain image in their mind of what they're going for in raising their kid, and that's conveyed to the kid and carries through to their life. So I'm more saying the name is more of like a representation of a whole complex of a value system and dreams and aspirations they have for their kid.
Yeah, would you say it's kind of like their greatest hope that they, I mean, I guess it depends. It depends on the parent.
That they reach that?
In other words, like, you know, some people sort of seem to name their kids after some meaningless thing. Some people, you know, try to, I guess, make it a big thing. And, you know, I don't know, they think about it a lot and they put, you know, like a lot of their, like you're saying, their aspirations. Is that, would you say that that's, is there some value in doing that? Is it important, or
the name itself?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd say more important is that you have an idea of what you're trying to raise in your kids and the values with which you're raising them. And look, you know, you can put the name that way. But, you know, if you really have a name of some concept which talks to you and you want to convey that to them, and, you know, I guess that could, you could do that. I feel like people don't quite do that these days. But maybe it would work. But I think more important than the name is, like, the name is like a little trick. It's a shortcut. People like a shortcut. But I think it's more important is the concept which the name represents. And, you know, it could be good if you come up with a good name. I don't know if there's anything wrong with it. But I'm saying it's like, it's not the point. It's not really the point. Like, I don't think it means Rus' parents actually named her Rus because Rava, whatever. It's, you find, you know, The name, the names are variable. It's not the name itself. It's more the ideas.
I'm Rabbi Feder. I think you have a proof from Yaakov.
Okay.
He changed Ben Oni to Ben Yamin.
Yeah.
Right? Because yeah. he didn't want to convey that concept in his name.
Right. Right, that's true. Yeah. Ben Oni. Yeah, that's true. Good point.
We do have a case in Tanakh though where a kid was born and the parents didn't name him, the women of the town named the kid.
Oh yeah, what was that?
I'm trying to remember. Does anybody remember where that is?
You have Noach where the grandparents named him.
Okay.
Isn't that Rosh Hashanah?
Yeah, it was at the end of Rosh.
That's what they Yeah, that's correct. Isn't that right at the end of Ruth? That they didn't name Naomi's son? I mean, Ruth's son? Naomi was caring for him, but the people of the town named him?
Yeah, okay. I don't know. What was his name? Was that? What's that?
I don't remember.
His name was Ovid, I think.
Ovid? Yeah. Ovid.
Yeah,
but they didn't name him. The women of the town named him, right?
Yeah, I don't recall. Sounds good.
You have anything to say about Moshe Rabbeinu that he was named by Bas Paro?
No. No,
well,
I don't.
That fits nicely. No,
yeah.
Because he was raised by Batya together with Yocheved. And you know, in the Psukim, I think actually Rabbi Fox just gave shiur on this about how the Psukim directly go from Batya acting in a very particular way. And then the Pasuk right next to it, the Moshe acting on the Mitzri, shows him acting in the exact same, there's a parallel between the way he acted and the way Batya acted. So it makes sense that he was imbuing the ethics that Batya conveyed.
Right. Yeah, see, I think it's like this. It's interesting because the Gemara here is saying Shema Garim, but at the same time, I mean, it cites two examples. It doesn't have, I don't know, maybe there's some Midrashim which have any more. But it seems to me is like the focus is not so much on the name. And it doesn't work all the time. And it doesn't, you know, you have a million names in Tanakh, and how many of them really work out this way. And that's what I'm saying is that If you look at the name itself, I don't know if this necessarily, I don't know, maybe it would be fruitful to try to take all the names in Tanakh and see if you could work out ideas for all of them. But it's hard to do so, and, you know, Chazal do it, it's one thing, but just to try to do it all the time, I'm sure it's not always going to work out. So to me, the main point is the concept about the parents and their impact on it and the subtle impact and the psychological impact and all that. And, you know, maybe you could try to make connections, the names here, there, and everywhere. But, you know, I'd say insofar as Chazal do so, then I feel like it's well-grounded. Insofar as they don't, I feel like the takeaway is more the concept, which is more profound to me, you know, more significant to me than the particulars of the name. But I don't know, you know, I didn't really think about it much. I was more just taking this Gemara and trying to explain this, but it might be a nice little project to take different names and chazals and see the names and see the ideas they express and try to, maybe there's more to say here. I'm just kind of trying to work with this Gemara as like a starting point, but maybe there's a much deeper, you know, bigger project to be done here.
Fetter?
Yeah.
Maybe that's where that chazal, where it says the parents have Ruach HaKodesh when they give the name, because it's not so much that they even necessarily know it, but it's something that it's some Ruach HaKodesh will cause them to give the name, and then later on figure out what that name that you had, that Ruach HaKodesh caused you to give as the name. I remember learning, I think it was a Sfas Emes, that when Yaakov Avinu had that fight on the bridge with that whatever entity, Satan, Sitrach, or whatever you want to call that entity, that he battled, and at the end, the entity asks him his name and tells him and says, well, from now on Yisrael, that I think what the Sfas Emes who explains that entity was saying, he wanted to know what his name was, but it would reflect why he was able to beat Satan. Let's use Satan as, or Yetzer, whatever it is, as the name of the entity. Right. He said, well, because your name is Yaakov, you knew Akev. The way you beat the Yetzer is to go roundabout. Head on, he's going to beat you. He'll outsmart you. He'll figure out a way to tempt you. But when you find Shurim that you happen to enjoy, when you engage in davening with people that you like, you know, you do things, you go roundabout, that's the way you beat the Yetzer. It's through the Akev, not through the Rosh. And as like a bonus, a consolation prize, he said, look, now that you succeeded in teaching the world your purpose, that was your name, Yaakov, was your purpose was to teach, fight me through the Akev, you would die. So rather, I'm going to give you the name Yisrael, go figure out what that means, and go fulfill the goal of a Yisrael.
Right. I hear you. That's nice. Yeah. But I wonder if that Ruach HaKodesh thing is a Chazal. I don't know if that's, if there is, I'd like to see the source of that. I know I've heard that thrown around. I'm just not sure what the original source of that is. So if you could find where that is, or the earliest source which has that idea of the name is Ruach HaKodesh, that would be helpful.
I will. I know Josh should have called. My father, Olaf Shalom's Chassidus Sharov.
Okay, there you go. So you can let me know.
I will.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, okay, good. Any other comments?
Yeah, I was later.
Yeah, it's left.
So, I think you have one more, the proof. It fits in very well. By this girl, Hossein Moshe.
Yeah.
He said changed his name 10 times.
Yeah, okay.
Each time it changed his name, it reflected a different concept that he had acquired a different meter that he had acquired. And then after he acquired all the 10 of them, then he went back to convert his family.
But
so that it falls in line with what you're saying, that the name would give him a certain perspective, a certain ability, a certain strength in these areas to carry on a mission. And that's what happened.
Right. Yeah, okay, good. Good. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of directions here to pursue. I mean, it's a good start, you know, but again, each of these names has to be, and I think it has to be developed more, but I like the thoughts. Good. Good. Anyone else? All right, everybody. So it's been a pleasure. Thanks for your contributions, as always. And, yeah, very social, everyone will be safe.